Using Meditation to Unlock My Inner Wisdom. Lecture 10. I listen within and reveal to me who and where I am. The quiet in me grabs my attention so completely I am unaware of anything else. I live in a sense of magical brilliance. I listen within and reveal to me who and where I am. The quiet in me grabs my attention so completely I am unaware of anything else. I live in a sense of magical brilliance. Meditation can be a very effective tool for us if we use it. It can accomplish many goals for us if we want to use it. But it's a matter of directing our attention to it. It's a matter of directing our attention to the goal, to what we want to achieve. Now, you guys might find it very practical to shove that table all the way forward here and sit behind it, and that way you have the table to write on. Although this is kind of nice too, isn't it?
That's why I teach
you. Yeah, however you feel comfortable. So, where do you go to get into meditation? Where do you go to start that? Now, I listen within and reveal to me who and where I am. The quiet in me grabs my attention so completely I am unaware of anything else. I live in a sense of magical brilliance. Now, how do you get into a sense of inner meditation? All of us have done it one way or another over the years, but have we just gone into it like it's the most natural thing in the world, or do we go into it like it's something special?
It's natural.
Natural. That's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. It should be the most natural thing in the world for us to go into meditation. And we go into meditation by doing what?
Going into our inner kingdom, within.
And that's all good, but how do we outwardly start to go inwardly?
Quieting.
Yeah, okay. And what do you mean by quietly? Quietly is an activity.
No, we quiet ourselves to listen.
We quiet ourselves. How do you quiet yourself?
Affirmation. By affirmation. When I say, I like me, I like me, I like me, I quickly remove outside
now, what,
from me.
Those doing an affirmation, you said, removes the outside
distraction.
Outside what?
Distractions.
Distractions, right.
Yeah, for me to start listening to my liking myself.
Now, I like me, I like me, I like me. That's not a distraction then.
No.
No. What is that?
It's a tuning in.
It's a direction.
Yeah.
It's a tuning in. Right, Chrissy?
Yes.
Now, how do you do it? Same way, huh? How do you go into your meditation? Chrissy?
I focus my attention on affirmation.
Yes?
And then concentrate on it.
And what affirmations do you use?
I am God, God I am.
Very good. And what does that affirmation do to you?
It makes me relax, try to disperse all.
It makes you relax.
And then
I'm God, God I am, I'm God, God I am. That makes you relax.
And then I start getting every cell of my body responding that I'm God.
Then you put your body to relaxation by saying every cell of my body is
God.
God. That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. And you say, I like me, which puts you into a relaxed mode so that you can feel in tune with your inner self.
Yes.
Now, what's the first thing you know, the first thing you understand or know that lets you know that you're on your inner mode, that you're meditating? I know you never thought of it before. But
I start having a feeling within.
You love the feeling within.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of a feeling is it?
It's a set of goosebumps is there. Then a sort of vibration within me.
Good thoughts and good vibrations.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what does it do to you?
It makes me be aware that...
Makes you be aware? That, and does it make you feel very settled and
yes.
relaxed and peaceful, harmonious?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that I am now alone with the inner knowingness.
And you like that?
Yes.
It's a good feeling. It makes you feel, yeah, this is it. This is it.
Yes.
Is yours similar to that or different, Chrissy?
Yeah, similar. I just feel mm-hmm. relaxed, a little bit good. But then I start too much thoughts going pair wide,
mm-hmm.
go disperse. Then I calm down, relax.
Very good. Now, Ibu Bey, do you feel that way too? You do. You feel that you can be relaxed and at peace. You feel you can listen within. You wrote it on your paper very nicely. Yeah. Yeah, you said all that good stuff right on your paper, and you wrote it very clearly. I was very happy about that. Now, you pick the words from here and there, but when you pick the words of what it is that you like to do, like your sports that you like to be interested in. That was your own variety, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Very nicely done. Okay, now, we've asked a question here, sort of. I listen within and reveal to me who and where I am. Now, is that what you were doing? Listening within, revealing to yourself who and where you are?
Yes.
Now, who are you?
I am God.
Yeah, God, but... You're divine, you're Christy. You're Christy the magnificent, Christy the intelligent, Christy the happy, Christy the content, Christy the satisfied, Christy the revealed. Nice, huh? And you are Sybil what?
The spiritually illumined.
And that works for you.
It works.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the quiet in me grabs my attention so completely I am unaware of anything else. That's the step that is very important that a lot of people miss, the quiet time. Right away they go from diving into their introspective state and then immediately going to work. Instead of taking a moment, it's our transition moment, of being quiet and let that grab you and let that just haul you away and let that just say to you, yes, you are wonderful. Yes, you are fantastic. Yes, you are great. Yes, it's so peaceful. What happens when you let go and relax? What happens to you when you do that?
You forget where you are. You forget that there's anything else but...
Nothing else exists.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You are the all. Are you happy in that state?
Yes.
You are happy in that state. Why are you happy in that state?
No more distraction. You are
happy. No distractions. Are distractions there?
Not anymore at that state.
They could be, but they don't touch you because you are in this relaxed state. And in the relaxed state, you don't care. You have no concern about these outer things. You have no concern what other people are doing and thinking and saying and feeling. You have no concern. You're relaxed. You know, you hit a person over the head, they're relaxed. They don't think a thing. They have nothing on their mind. They're unconscious. Unconscious. Not conscious. Not subconscious. But unconscious.
Yeah. No more aware.
And what happens then when you're unconscious?
You wouldn't know what is happening.
Revealed.
Well, that's it. That you're right. You don't know what's happening. When you are unconscious, you are not in control.
Yeah.
You are not consciously aware, consciously controlled. You don't ever want to be unconscious, and you don't ever want to be under anybody else's hypnosis. A lot of people object with me on that. because they've learned hypnosis, and they've learned that hypnosis can do good things for you, and hypnosis can be fine. But I always come back to the statement. I know what that's all about. I always come back to the statement, Jesus was never hypnotized. Jesus was always conscious of everything he did. Jesus was always on top of everything he did. There was never a time when Jesus was unaware of what was happening. Now, he pretended to be unaware sometimes, to be untouched. Yes. He knew, but he chose not to be touched. Yes. But, you see, that's the point. He knew, but he chose not to be touched. Now, can we know that we're in the world and not be touched by it?
Yes.
Sure. We do it all the time. We do it all the time. You're meditating, and you're taking care of the children. And the children are relaxing, and you have time for your peaceful quiet. So you're in your peaceful quiet. You're aware of the children. You're aware of what's
yes.
going on, but you're not concerned, because it's all right. Everything is okay. Everything is handling it. And the moment something is out of the ordinary, or the moment it needs your physical attention, you can snap right back to your physical attention. And then you can go right back to your meditation again, because you are not possessed or claimed by or controlled by that meditation. If you're hypnotized and so forth, you're controlled by the meditation, and you don't know anything. People can prick you with a pin, and you don't feel it. But and under hypnosis. But when you're in deep meditation, people can prick you with a pin, and you're aware of it. Because deep meditation is not, hypnosis is not, what other word would you use for it? It's not something where you are unaware of what's going on in your world. You are conscious of your, if you wish. But you participate if you wish, but if you want to participate in the meditation part, you can. And you do. Now, when you're in meditation, what happens to your world? What happens to things that are happening in your world? If you were to walk into a room that was very angry, people were arguing and having all sorts of discourse and unhappiness, and you are a mellow, gentle person, and you walk in that room and you say to yourself, and then you say to yourself, peace. You might even sit down. Fold your hands in your lap, saying, peace. I surround this room with my infinite peace. I see this room balanced and peaceful now. I see it now. And nobody would notice you doing that, because you're not in harmony with what they're doing. Nobody would notice it. And then, by the time they notice that you're doing that, they are already controlled by the balance and peace that you have brought to the room. They are already in that aura of peace and balance. Now you see, that's just a little example of what happens when you are in balance with yourself, when you are in peace with yourself, and when you say to your world, all is balance, all is peace. It's not, you be peace, you be peace, I'll knock your block off if you don't be peace. You know, that's not the way to do it. Because that's only a temporary thing, temporary control. But when you do this in your heart, in your soul, in your being, in your consciousness, then it's an aura that spreads out through everywhere in the area that you're thinking. Now, let's take that area that you're thinking. What area are you thinking of for peace?
Within.
I can't hear you.
Within.
Within.
Yes.
Excellent. The area that you're thinking of for peace is within. Now, does that cover every other area too?
Yes.
Does that cover the world?
Yes.
And that's enough. That's pretty good for us. Now, does it cover the world? Yes. Why don't we say, I balance the world, or I am peace with the world? We don't need to. If we are peace within ourselves, and truly peace within ourselves, and truly aware that we are peace within ourselves, then what happens to everything around us?
Imbalance.
It's peace. It's balance. It's harmony. It's oneness. There is no inharmony. And you see, this is a beautiful thing. This is a beautiful thing that we need to be aware of. We need to be aware that we don't have to run up down the street shouting, peace, peace, peace. You know? We don't have to be an irritant to other people. All we are is a very subtle, underlying peace that enfolds everybody and everything. There now is peace on earth.
And it began with me
in my thought. Not my action. I didn't get out there with a gun and say, now stop it. You know, it began in my thought. And the thought is so powerful. We are afraid of the thought. Just imagine if our military establishments had a center that they call the Peace Center. And then they had people working in there on thoughts of peace.
Yes.
I mean, if they're paid, it's technical, it's, you know, business. But the thing is, does it work?
It works.
Sure, you bet. What are they doing? They're moving the thoughts of the world into a very peaceful attitude, into a very peaceful circumstance. And that's wonderful. They're moving the thought of the world into that very beautiful circumstance, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Now, you see, when someone asks for something, you give it to them, and you bring a smile to their face. Now, isn't that wonderful? Yes. Yes. Go ahead, do what you want to do. And then do what you want to do. You want to take the other one back and put it over here, right? Yes, you do. What do you want to do with it? May I have that? Okay, thank you. Thank you, both. I appreciate that. Now, what is peace? Peace is not conflict. Peace is balance and harmony and joy and right action. Peace is all that is good. How do you bring about peace? First?
Peace within.
Peace within, right. First you go peace within. And what happens when you go peace within?
The aura spreads.
The aura what?
The aura of peace.
Oh, the aura spreads and stays and spreads. Yeah, yes. That's right. Now, what is this aura of peace that we have within us?
That's the balance.
Well, how does it... What happens? What makes it so? You know, I mean, here we are. We walk into a room of all sorts of uptight people, and we say, "Whoops! I better turn on my peace." Well, now, what is it that we're turning on?
Vibration.
Yes, but what is it that we're turning on? Vibration. How do we turn on a vibration? Om Manasata. No, that does it too, but it doesn't. We don't have to do that. How do we do it?
By
our thoughts. But what thoughts?
Charisma.
Huh? By our thoughts.
Peace. Balance and harmony.
Now, what sort of statement would you make about peace? You say, you don't say all of you are in peace. You don't say all of you are balanced. You don't say...
There now is peace.
Ah, so. A generative statement like that, that's universal. There now is peace. Beautiful. Now,
and it began with me.
And it begins with you, right. And when it is with you, then you are a generating station, a charismatic generating station. You know, and it just goes out from you. Really, that's what it is. You're a charismatic generating station. You generate that peace to all in your understanding, your vibration. Now, can you think a thought and have that thought be acted upon, known, aware of, on the other side of the earth, instantly?
Yes.
Is there any special energy you have to have, any high power or something like that?
No.
Well, what do you have to have?
The conviction.
The thought.
Yeah.
Not the conviction, the thought. The conviction of the thought, yes, but it's a thought you got to have. So, you guys are over here in London, England, and I'm on the campus, on the other side of the world, virtually, you know. And so, you think to yourself, you know, when Herb visited us in Nigeria and in London, It was such a peaceful, wonderful, happy time. I'm only now beginning to recognize some of the things he talked about, because at the time he talked about them, they seemed so simple and they seemed so natural, you know, that why would he bother talking about it? And now I'm beginning to see, if I apply what he talked about, great things happen. And this morning, Christy and I, you say, were starting to apply what he said, and Ibube came up to us and he said, "You know what you guys are doing? You're putting thoughts in motion." And you said, "Oh, you're right, Ibube, you're right. We're putting thoughts in motion." And then Ibube says, "Why don't you tell Herb about it?" And so you say, "Well, Ibube, you tell Herb about it." And he says, "Okay, I will." And then you, in your innocence and stupidity, you say, "Okay, Ibube, let's use the telephone, or let's use the email, or you do this." And Ibube says to you, "Ibu, what do you say? Say it out loud. Use your mind. Use your mind, your thought." See, I tell you, he's a good, smart kid. Use your mind, as if you didn't know. Use your mind, use your thought. And when you use your mind and you use your thought, what happens?
It manifests.
Instantly. Instantly it's done. It's not a matter of manifest, but instantly it is revealed. See, manifesting means appear that where it hadn't been before, you might say, you know. But to reveal it means mind or subject or object or anything we want. And you realize that when you involve certain circumstances together, you get interest and attention and all that other good stuff, you know? Yeah? Yeah? And it's kind of nice, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's true. Yeah. And it's wonderful to let the genius be revealed, because we're good. We're all very good. And Ibube is right there with us. He's a class act, number one.
So that's what was happening in the Masters of the Far East.
That's true.
So this thought transfer has been on and on and on. And why are we not making use of it?
And when are we going to start applying it and enjoying it? Yeah, we read these things in the Master of the Far East. We read these things in the teachings of Jesus. We read these things in Jonathan Livingston Siegel. And, you know, we read these things in many, many other areas. And it's good stuff. But when are we going to apply it? And to apply it does not mean some tedious job. It just means some very natural activity on our part. The natural activity of saying, "Ibube, where do we use it?"
In our mind.
In our mind. In our mind. I mean, you know, he understands it so clearly. A few clues don't hurt, but he understands it very clearly. Do you understand it very clearly?
Yes.
Do they?
I don't know.
you don't know, huh? You said the right word first. First you said yes.
He said for himself.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, I know.
Yeah.
For them, I don't know.
And we don't always know why we know. And that's the beautiful
yes.
thing. We have such a brilliance inside of us, but we don't know why and how it's there.
I know.
We know that we know. We know that. And like the article said in that magazine, it said... the fellow, he said, "I did it. I wrote this. I created this formula and stuff like that." He said, "But how? I don't know. It was an inspiration in me that came to me, and of myself I would have never thought of it, but that inspiration came in me and revealed itself to me, and I had to write it down, and it was there." And he said, "And I got all the credit." But, I mean, that was big of him to say, but it was also in depth of him to say, you know, a deep understanding of what's going on. Can you say that too? And you say, "Oh, yes, of course."
Yes,
you
I can.
Cannot. Oh, you can?
Yes.
Well, good.
When I mean, I say it, this is
all right, well then, remember to say it.
I said it to my head.
Remember to say it. Whenever we say something to you, say, "Yes, I know." Mm-hmm. And then give us the answer, because out of the mouths of little children come wonderful things.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah. That's wonderful, huh?
Yeah.
You bet. But you see, we want to direct the flow, so it always is going to be universally beneficial.
Yes.
Especially starting at the home. But that's the wonderful thing about this philosophy and this work that we're doing. What we're doing is we're learning not a technique, but we're learning what we have always been using but didn't know we were using it, and didn't use it as fully as we could because we didn't know we were using it. It's really something. I was walking down your streets here, down your roads, and I was thinking, how come this house has a walkway going straight out like this from the house to the road, which goes in the middle of it, and not right to the sidewalk, which is right there, and they have a fence. You can't walk through the fence to the sidewalk because it's in the way. And in other places, they don't have a fence, and some do and some don't. And I thought, why did they do this? Well, because they put the fence in before they even thought of that. They just put the fence in and made it just the way they wanted it made.
Yeah.
And so afterwards, it looked silly, but in the beginning, it looked just fine. And I thought, and they haven't changed it, so therefore that's the way they want it. That's the way they want to have it.
That's why it's a
proof. And this is the way this thing works all the time that way, that people do things like that. They create things that look right at the time, but later they seem to be rather useless. And then I was walking along, and I saw beautiful new cars parked, and they were parked in the bushes, like the bush had grown over it. And I thought, with the little clippers, just a little hand clipper, you could clip those bushes off and have a nice area to drive right into to make it so beautiful and so perfect. And, as I'm always the husband or the gardener,
yes,
going along, making everything, adding my sense of beauty to it.
Please.
But perhaps they have their own sense of beauty. They look at it, and they see these young bush leaves leaning over on their car, and they think, isn't that nice? The little bushes are caressing my car. Now, who would want to not let them caress the car by cutting them away, How thoughtless to want to cut them away when the bushes are caressing the car, And really, these are, what sort of thoughts go through our mind? What sort of thoughts go through our head? Why do we go out and reinterpret the world? Now, I look, as I walk in your park out here, and I look over the whole thing, and I say, what a beautiful park. I say, what a lovely park. I can just delight in this park. And then I get close to it, and I see where they haven't cut back, and they haven't cut back into the bushes, and they haven't cut here, and they haven't done that. And I think, that's kind of unusual. It's cut so nice out here, and it's not cut there, which is, just like another 10 feet in. Now, there's probably a reason for it. And what the reason is, I don't know or care. But to me, it is not harmonious with my eyes because they've done such a lovely job. I do a little more. And then the thought came to me, Herb, MYB, mind your own business. Mind your own. Look at it and delight in what you see and stop interpolating what you see in the light of how you think it should be. If you're going to redesign the earth every time you look at it, and other people may have designed it just the way they have it, and probably they have, and you go in and redesign it and read and tell the world how to trim around their bushes and how to trim around their ponds and how to go into the pond with their net and take the bottles out that people throw in there and stuff like that. Well, there are some people that don't even see the bottles. Some people that only see the lovely pond, Some people only see the lovely experiences that are there. And truly, that's what it is. How are you a benefit to the world? Are you a benefit to the world in reinterpreting the world, telling the world how to redesign itself, how to rethink itself? Or are you what? Are you looking at the world and saying, it's glorious, it was just the way it is? Now just think, Christy, you're living here, and you're living here for 10 years. And for 10 years you've had these bushes growing just the way they're growing, and the bushes are none of your business. You pay your rent, and that includes having the bushes trimmed by somebody else's idea. Now, do you want to get in there and tell them to trim it by your idea?
I see no bushes.
Hmm?
I see no bushes.
That's not my point. That's not my point. My point is that you see the bushes, which are beautiful bushes, damn it. They're beautiful bushes. You're not trying to get rid of the bushes. You're merely trying to tell somebody else how to care for them, how to trim them, and how to fix them up and make them nice. But you, as you say, you don't even see them. You look at the bushes, and they're just a piece of green material there, and it's perfectly satisfactory to you. You don't care what anyone does to those bushes or does not do to those bushes. You're not normal in this response, but you don't care what people do. Other people, and I'd say that's most people, they look at how the bushes are, and they'd say, I would do it this way. Everybody's got their own way of doing things, their own attitude about doing things. And the thing is, do you have the desire, not the right, but the desire, to go all over the world, wherever you are, and redesign all the bushes wherever you go?
Yes. Mind my business.
Hmm? Yeah, mind your own business. That's the point. You go and you see the overall beauty and you let it alone. You're in Paris and there are, this is the day the street cleaner didn't work. And so the streets are filled with all sorts of nonsense. And you look and you say, what a stupid place Paris is. The streets are so dirty. London is cleaner than that. And they said, we have dirty streets, you know. And what's all this about? And you see, if you are a master, if you are peace, if you are God, if you are Jesus, if you are good, you don't judge. Judge not, lest you be judged. So you look at the streets, and you see beautiful streets. You look at the bushes, you see beautiful bushes. You look at the people, you see beautiful people. Everything to you is beautiful. And you know, if you live with desert tribes, it's not going to take you very long at all to become accustomed to their attitudes. Not very long at all to become accustomed to what they eat, what they drink, and what they do, where they potty. Because that's the way it's done. And are you going to change it? Are you going to bring your city toilet along? Are you going to bring your city sink along and stuff like that? No. You're going to do as the Romans do. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. You're going to, in the desert, with the Bedouin tribes, you're going to live like they do. Because you have no other alternative unless you want to die. Because you just do as they do. And then after you have done as they have done for a period of time, you think, that's the most normal thing in the world. Because that's the way it's being done. And you've given up fighting it, saying, I want it to be done the way I'm used to it. And you're now saying, this is okay. It's okay the way it's being done. Now, you see, those are the first steps into meditation. When you're with the Bedouin tribe and they act in certain ways as is their norm, you don't fight it. You flow with it. And when you flow with it, then you are in your state of meditation. And when you don't flow with it, you're in a very unmeditative state. You're in a very distressed state. So you see how meditation can be thought of in many different ways and many beautiful ways. And when it's thought of in these many beautiful ways, many beautiful things come out of it for you. Because then you MYOB, you keep, you mind your own business, you keep your nose out of whatever doesn't concern you, and you put it in what does concern you. Now, the chef says, how did you like that piece of meat? And you said, well, okay, it's different for me. I must admit it's different. Now, just give me time to try it a couple of times, and then I'll tell you. But for to tell you straight off the bat, I'd say, it's different. And that's not the answer you want. You want, it's exquisite, it's beautiful, it's wonderful, it's fantastic, you hate it, you know, whatever the case may be. But give me time. And with mellowing of time, with the mellowing of a practice of eating it, you find, hey, that's not bad. That's not bad. This is what they eat, then I'm going to eat that. I would like to live, you know. I would like to have my body survive. And so I'm eating it, not any objection whatsoever. But meditation, to be understood, to be practiced, to be lived, to be utilized, to be benefited in your life, means doing what comes naturally. You do what comes naturally. Do you know that each of us was designed to be 100% in meditation all of our life? Each of us was designed to be that way by our Creator ourselves, designed to be 100% meditative all of our life. And we are the ones who are let ourselves be distracted from it. We let ourselves be distracted from the meditative technique and program that we had. What do little children do? They sit in the play box and they play with the sand. And they make their little cars and they make their little cities and they make their little roadways and stuff like that in the sand. And when they're done, they kick it and they go back in the house. They don't care. There's no possession. There's no ownership. There's no saying that that's a monument to what I have done at this age, you know. No, they just do it. And they think nothing about it. They think nothing about it. And you do. You think a lot about it. If you would realize, as mothers, as women, as cleanly people, like the doctor yesterday, wash your hands, son, wash your hands, you know. If he knew how much he didn't wash his hands, if he knew what he touched after he washed his hands, he wouldn't be hollering at him to wash his hands so much. Little children play in the play box. And when they have to go potty, they go potty. And if it's in their way, they cover it with sand. And then they're digging through the sand, they're digging through the potty, and after a while it all gets mixed up and nobody knows that it was there and that it wasn't there. And the kids got it all over their hands, all over their clothes, all over themselves, and the mommy kisses their potty face, you know, and all that stuff. And if she knew what was all in that sand that she's kissing, she'd be quite surprised, wouldn't she? Yeah, she would. Yeah. Well, we won't tell her. We won't tell her. No. But the thing is, that's the fact. Now, why is it that it doesn't bother the kids? Why is it that they are healthy regardless of the dirty dirt that they play with?
They have not been brainwashed.
What?
They have not been brainwashed.
Pre-washed.
Brainwashed.
Brainwashed, yeah. Yeah, that's right. They have not been brainwashed. And that's it, exactly it. They have not been brainwashed that this is what has to be done. And just think of the poor children in the desert. Now, you go to a doctor, Miss Chrissy, or is it Sybil? You go to the doctor, and the doctor says to you, "All right, have you had your 8 glasses of water today?" Ha! How many kids drink 4 glasses of water a day, or less, you know? And they're playing in the sandbox. And how many kids urinate and have even less fluid in their system than, you know, that's normal that they should, and are living perfectly happy, perfectly content? How many children in the desert areas drink maybe a half a glass or a quarter of a glass, if that much, of water? And they're surviving, not perhaps as perfectly as the doctor would like them to, but why don't they die? Why don't they die? Because the doctors say, if you don't have enough water, your body will expire. But they don't. And it's all because of what's in their mind. The children of the desert have not been brainwashed to need water. They've been brainwashed to think that they don't need water, which is what they have to do because that's how they live. And the children of the desert drink water from sources that other people wouldn't drink. Well, now, let me tell you something else. You've never had too much to do with animals, dogs or cats or something. But dogs drink from the street water. They drink from all sorts of places that you wouldn't even think of looking at, much less drinking from. And they are perfectly happy. And then you go kiss them on the nose and stuff, and they lick your face and things like that after drinking this stuff, you know? And it's all a matter of consciousness. It's all a matter of attitude. Now, does a dog know how to meditate?
No.
Every time he lays his head down, he meditates. He is completely out, but he has one ear tuned to listening to what's going on in case they're going to go for a walk or something, you know. He's all ready, and he's ready to leap up. But Rex is changing. Rex doesn't do that anymore. He knows I'll kick him or say, come on, boy, let's go, you know. So he doesn't have to worry about being on alert.
Okay.
So he can be off alert. And I don't know whether he's happy about it or not, but he sure is taking advantage of it. He's looking out the window, laying on the bed, and I'm getting ready to take a walk, and I get everything ready. And the only thing that snaps him to his attention is one thing. What do you think it is? The cookie. The cookie box. If I come up with cookie, up he is like, you know, lightning. And the cats are the same way. Cookie, up they come. They just love cookies. Do you like cookies, Ibu Bay? Yes, you'd jump up for a cookie too, wouldn't you? But you see, cookies are just what it's all about. And that's for meditation. No, and at another time, Ibu Bay. Yeah, at another time. So, and your name's not Rex. Your name is Ibu Bay. So, we want to learn how to meditate. We want to learn how to do it. Well, let's rephrase that statement. Has anything I said given you a clue as to how we should rephrase that statement? We should rephrase that statement to return
to our original purity and integrity.
What?
Return to our original purity and integrity.
Exactly. And where is that? And what is there in that that we would learn?
Relaxation.
Peace.
We would return to our original purity and integrity and be like the children. We'd be in perfect state of meditation.
Be in paradise.
In paradise. We would be really in paradise. Wouldn't that be something?
Good.
Now, isn't that something?
It is.
It's where we are. Now, what do you want to do? Do you want to have that experience?
We all have it.
It's done. It's all done. We are putting our attention there, and we're experiencing it. We are putting our attention on that meditation, and we're experiencing it. Yeah, meditation is what humans have done from the beginning of time. Meditation is what they've done to accomplish all the things. Do you think that the wife of the hunter is sitting at home cooking?
No.
What's she doing? She's meditating.
Meditating.
And you know what she's meditating on?
That a nice hunt is brought
what?
Home. Something good is brought home.
She is meditating on surrounding her husband with her pure white light of love and seeing him not protected, but at all times having a good time, a good day, and finding dinner.
Yes.
She sees him finding dinner. And when they're working in the field all day, what do they do? Before they go to the field, what does the mother do? She puts a pot of rice on the stove. So when they come out of the field after dinner, after lunch, and ready for dinner, they can have some rice. It's all cooked. Now, she's thought ahead. She meditated on it. Now, while she's in the field, does the fire burn properly? Exactly. She's got it down to a gnat's eyebrow of how to have that fire burn so it'll burn all morning long and just a light warming burn, you know, to make that rice perfect. And you'd say, well, sometimes it get too hot or get too cold or whatever, and it wouldn't be perfect. Well, she learns. How does she learn?
Practice.
And meditation and intuition and practice. But if she is not intuitively guided on how to do it, she'll never do it right. But all things in our life, all things in our world, we have done basically on meditation. Basically, we've done it on how we should do it, and the divine in us tells us how to do it. Little children, they know how to do things. The divine in them tells them how to do it. If little children were left alone in an emergency, they would come out fine. But in an emergency, everybody gets all panicky and worried and upset and afraid for the children and stuff like that, and they block the children from being tuned in to their divine center to know the right thing to do. And they would know the right thing to do. They would know the right thing to do because that is their reality. That is who they are. That's what they're all about. That's what they're going upon. So, you see, these things are pretty terrific. We work in a pretty terrific program here. All right. We've said, I listen within and reveal to me who and what I am. Now, you're listening within and revealing to yourself who and what you are. Who are you? Who are you? Christy, who are you?
I am Christy.
That's a good start. But I would hate to think that you were just Christy.
God Christy. Divine Christy.
Ideal Christy.
What?
Ideal Christy.
Ideal. Oh! See? Out of the mouth of babes. Ideal Christy. Is that right?
Yes.
Is that good?
Yes.
Is that better than all those other things you said?
Yes.
You know, boy, that's what you said. Can you understand that that is more understood than God Christy and Divine Christy and all those things? Those are great words. They're great words. But you don't know what they mean. You don't know what God Christy and Divine Christy and all that stuff means. But Ideal Christy, you have a pretty good idea what it means. The best. The neatest. The most wonderful. The most fabulous. Is that true?
Yes.
What do you mean, yes?
It is true. Truth.
Yeah, it's true. Yes, it's true. You know, when I give you these illustrations, you hear me give the talks, don't you? My meditation talks and stuff like that. You hear me as I'm talking away there. Do I get excited at times?
Yes.
Do I get happy at times?
Yes.
Do I get silly at times?
Illumined.
Illumined. Thank you. That's a nice way of saying everything. So I get illumined. Now, what am I doing when I'm illumined?
You share your breath.
It struck me. It struck me. Are you the ideal Christy? Oh, yes, I am the ideal Christy. I am the ideal Christy. I am. Now, can you say that?
Yes.
Not yes. I am the ideal Christy.
I am ideal Christy.
I say.
That's right. And he's the one who turned us on to it, isn't he? And is it the truth?
Yes.
It is the truth. And is it always the truth?
Yes.
Whether you're sleeping or whether you're awake?
Yes.
Yes. Always you're the ideal Christy. And why are you the ideal Christy? Because he said so.
I am. Because he said so. The
truth. It's the truth.
And he said it.
And he said it. Beautiful.
And it's done. Hey,
right. Done. Right, right, right. So, now you want to say it and have it be the truth. What did you return to?
My original purity and integrity.
What's your original purity and integrity?
I am ideal Christy.
My ideal self.
And what does ideal Christy mean?
My original purity and integrity.
Take it right in the loop, right in the circle. And that's true. Stay with it. Always stay with something that you understand and that you can work with. And then there's lots of times you'll be using I am ideal, not ideal, but I am the allness and I am infinite and all that other good stuff. There was lots of time to say those things, that I am God, and that doesn't mean anything to you.
Can we also add my archetypal reality?
I've heard those words before. How about that? And it's true. And they're just as confusing.
Yes. Sometimes it's good to confuse them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's
the
only
onlooker.
Yeah, it's only confusing because we try to make ourselves understand it.
Okay.
How many words of the English language does a dog understand?
One at a time.
One at a time. But a dog usually understands only a few words. Come means come. Sit, sit, stop, come. And then you say, oh, you're a good dog. You're such a wonderful dog. You're so fantastic. I love you. Oh, Rex, you're so good. You're so fantastic. Oh, Rex, you're wonderful. I love you. What does Rex understand? He understands a feeling. He doesn't understand those garbledygook of words, all that gush, gush, gush. You know, it doesn't mean a thing to him, but the feeling means something to him. Rex, shame on you. Shame, shame, shame. He doesn't know what shame means. He doesn't mean shame on you or whatever. He just knows, whoops, I did something wrong. I'm getting a spanking. I'm getting it told off, you know. Yeah. And so he perhaps doesn't do it again. Or maybe he does. But if you say shame on you enough times, he'll get the point, you know, and stop doing it. But the point right next to it, he may not stop doing because he doesn't understand. Their vocabulary is very, very small. And their emotionality is very, very big. Even a teeny-weeny little bit of love goes a long way with a dog. And when someone has died and the dog was their master, the dog feels bad, not because the person died, because that's natural in a dog's world, but because the people around the person who died feel sad. And the dog responds to the sadness of the people around the person who died. You know? A person dies, and the dog is with them, and then people come along, and they see the dog sitting next to their dead master. And they say, what a beautiful... They read everything into it which is not there. The only thing that is there is that that dog knew that that man was his master and now the man wasn't home anymore. You know? And that dog is just waiting for somebody to come along and be its master. It doesn't say, that old master is the master that I want. That's the master I want. Hey, no one else, you know. But sometimes people write that into it and they say that that's what the dog's doing and it's not. All you have to do is read some of these dog publications or dog books or dog people who read dog psychology and so on, and they've done research on this. And it's just not so. Dogs don't have that great a vocabulary. Well, now, you don't either. We don't either have a very great vocabulary. Our vocabulary is very small. Me, mine, you know. And this is my family, this is my pet, this is my thing. And possession is really all we know. And so then we come along with our philosophy, and the philosophy of the philosophers and psychologists of all time, they want to take away possession. They want to take away your possession. Now, little children are very good at possession. Now, if a child has a car, and a friend comes over and wants to borrow the car, the child says, sure, use it. Take it. The friend says, can I keep it? Sure, keep it. And the child says, Dad, I want another car. I gave my car to my friend. Well, you can't do that. It's the father that teaches possession. The father that teaches you, it's your car, and you should hang on to it, and you shouldn't give it away, because I got to buy you a new one if you do. You know. And the father doesn't have to buy a new one. He just says, okay, you gave it away. Ask your friend if you can borrow their toys, you know. And just, you'll be being perfectly unemotional, you know, effectual about this, just saying, okay, ask them if you can. But the minute you start saying, you take care of your stuff, you take care of your stuff, you won't get any more, well, that makes possession. And that's a very undesirable possession. And that's what people do with nations. They possess their nation. They're nationalists, they're called. And they're people who think that their nation is the greatest nation in the world, whereas their nation is okay. But the only reason it's the greatest nation in the world is they grew up there. And they don't know any different. They don't know that other nations might even be better or worse, you know. And it's just a matter that they grew up there. Now, how are we going to train ourselves so that we are universalists? How can you become a universalist through meditation? In meditation, you say, I am peace. And when you say, I am peace, you fall asleep. No, you relax very much. And when you say, I am peace, then you say, you know, I feel like going for a drive in the country today. I feel like driving out to the mountains or to the valleys or to wherever. And I want to drive out in a very lovely car. I feel like driving out there. Right now, I have my perfect car to drive. I don't need to own it. I don't need to chauffeur it even. But I have the perfect car to drive in the country. And so, I'm sitting there, and the door, and I open the door and say, yes, your car is here, ma'am. And you say, what? I ordered a car? Yes, you did. And, okay, just a minute, I'll be right with you. So, you get your scarf, and you get your basket, and you go out and get in your Rolls Royce, the big old expensive car, and the chauffeur opens the door for you, and you sit down, and he closes the door, you know. You don't have to do it yourself. And then he doesn't ask you where you want to go, because he knows where you're going to, because you have told them already where you're going, mentally. And so he takes you out to the valleys, through the mountains, and you have a picnic out there. In the back of the car is a beautiful folding table and all the paraphernalia for the picnic and lovely glasses and a bottle of wine and everything, you know, all ideal. And you think to yourself, wow, how did this happen so perfectly? Well, you meditated on it ever so slimly, ever so little bit. You meditated on it and you demonstrated it for yourself. Now, is that true? Yes, it is. Has it happened to you recently? No. But why not? Because you haven't just casually put it in motion and let it be. You know? Kids get this all the time. You're in a poor neighborhood and nobody's got anything. And then one family happened to have a summer cottage. And they say to the kids in the neighborhood, ask your mom and dad if you can come along for a week up to the summer cottage. You know, we'll take care of you. And so they run home and say, Mom, Dad, you know, the Agabos have asked me up to their summer camp, and can I go? Oh, yes. I wish they'd ask me. Oh, yes, you can go. Yeah. Now, what do you need to take? Oh, nothing. We all go naked up there, and so we don't need anything, and we have just a good time. And so the mothers and fathers say, well, it's a little different than we're used to, but okay, go ahead. And so they went. And the kids go up there and have an ideal fun because there is no nonsense. There's no attitudes. There's no anything to make anybody think anything. And some of the kids are fat and thin, and some of the kids have bad eczema and various other things. But by the time they come home from that camp, by the time they come home from that experience, they are clean as a whistle. And why are they clean as a whistle? Because they don't see it anymore. They don't see their problem. At home, it's brought to their attention. Go wash and get that eczema off you. Go do this and do that. And at the summer cottage, they never had to wash. They never had to wash. Seville, why?
Because it's not necessary. It's not necessary.
It's not needed, but the thing is, they never had to wash because they're in the lake all the time. They were soaking in the lake. When are they going to get dirty? But it wasn't needed. It wasn't needed. And really, it wasn't needed. And did you wash after you went to the bathroom? Did you do this? Did you do that? It wasn't needed. Because that's not where the dirtiness comes from. That's what we think it is, but that's not where the dirtiness comes from. The dirtiness comes from our attitude about it. Dogs will go a year or more, two or three, without a bath. You clean off a dirty spot or something, but without a bath. And the dog's skin produces the oil as an emollient that gives the dog a perfect complexion, a perfect skin, a perfect everything, and the dog never has any itches or any bothersome, you know, not even fleas. But because we bathe our dogs like we bathe ourselves so often, that this happens to us. Now, I have gone for a year without bathing, several times, many times, in fact, and my body does not have any odor. My body does not soil my clothing. My body does not do anything, and I can wear the same clothing even, and it doesn't have any odor. I ask other people to smell because, you know, you never know. You're used to your own smell. And sometimes you get a smell when you're in an unusual situation where you're pushing yourself and you shouldn't, you know. But normally you don't. And even human bodies. Napoleon said to his wife, you know, "Don't take a bath. I'm coming home in about 3 weeks. And I want you smelling as my beautiful Josephine, you know." And that was the way it was done in those days. That's the way it was. Now, maybe the lack of hygiene in those days was part of the reason these people died. Maybe it was part of the reason they didn't live long. But I doubt that that was the case. What was the case? Were the thing that they had bad attitudes about themselves. How did they get the bad attitudes about themselves? How?
Thoughts.
Yeah, but where did the thoughts come from?
The environment.
Yeah, but where did the environment come from?
From the offspring, inherited.
Hmm?
From their parents.
From the family and so forth. But where did the family and so forth get it?
The society.
Hmm?
The society.
Society, well, that's the same thing. Okay, now, where'd they get it? Hand me down. From mother to father to son to daughters and on to the family heritage. And then along comes a butcher, and the butcher says, "Sorry, my pigs have trichinosis." And so what happened? The entire Jewish philosophy added a new chapter to its life and said, we don't eat meat. That is, we don't eat swine. We don't eat pork. Where pork had been one of their mainstays. And so then all of a sudden they didn't eat pork because their pork at that moment was experiencing trichinosis. It too would pass, but meanwhile a lot of people would die. But the priests somehow got wind that the trichinosis was causing the death and causing the illnesses, and they just abandoned it. They said no to it, you see? And now, was that good or bad? Well, it kept a few people alive, but to this day, they're still not eating it. They're still not eating pork. And what an interesting waste for them who love the pork. And a lot of Hebrews will eat pork. But the thing is, they call themselves the New Hebrews. And a lot of Catholic priests get married, and they call themselves the New Catholics. And so they allow themselves to do that. You see, in our meditation time, we figure out all sorts of ways to accomplish whatever we want to accomplish in life. Now, what do you want to accomplish in life? What do you want for yourself? Do you want to be a happy person? Do you want to be a successful person? Do you want to be a healthy person? Do you want to be a person who is surrounded by friends? Do you want to be a person that lives an illumined life? Or would you like to be a person that just is at peace with yourself? You don't really care what's going on in the world. You're just at peace with yourself. If the world comes to your attention that there's a problem, you immediately say what?
There now is peace on earth.
And it's done. And are you going to worry about peace on earth before it isn't there to say it has to be there?
No.
People do. They oftentimes think that there should be peace on earth when there's no peace on earth, and there is peace on earth, but they don't know there's peace on earth. Because inside of themselves, they are so confused and so unhappy. Now, we had a very happy guy here for a while this morning. He was really tuned in. Now, why was he tuned in? He was tuned in because he understood what we were saying. Other times, he's not tuned in because he doesn't understand what we're saying. And when he doesn't understand what we're saying, it's boring.
Yeah.
Very boring.
He does his own thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And you see, when you're content and you're tuned in, life's worth living. But when you're not, life's not worth living. One of the best ways for parents to teach children, one of the best ways for parents to teach children is to tell them that they shouldn't listen to what they're talking about. This is a parent conversation. This is adult stuff. They shouldn't listen to it. So then they hide behind the corner and listen. And they learn. And they learn what the parents would like to have taught them, but would not have been able to have taught them if they hadn't made it into a mystery. And the minute they made it into a mystery, then the kids said, oh, we listen to things we're not supposed to listen to. And you see, it takes magic in a person to raise a family and teach and do things, as you know. You know, you've been in families, you've been part of families, and you're aware of how it works. No. Just remember that always. Every time you go into a situation that's confusing to you, any type of confusion, the first thing you say is,
there now is peace what? On earth. There now is peace on
No,
earth.
You're not in a confusing situation. You're just in a situation where you don't know what to do.
All is peace. All is peace.
Well, I would say I am balanced. I am balanced. And all is peace is good, but I am balanced.
Divine order.
All is in divine order. I am balanced. You see, because what you're doing is you're settling your own attitude about the circumstances you're facing. And you're not saying the circumstances, war or anger or hatred or something, but you're just confused. You go into a lot of situations in life where it's confusing. You know.
Every morning I go around my compound saying, I like me, I am divine order, I am peace, I am balance, I am harmony.
That's good stuff. Where'd you hear that? I think that's great.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. But truly, that's good stuff. Use it. Say it. Put it to work for yourself. Especially the one, I like me.
Yes.
I know I'm walking up the path and I'm feeling okay, it's the morning, I'm getting ready to go, and I'm walking up the path, it's steep and so forth, and Rex is ahead of me and what have you, and I'm trudging along and I say, I'm vital dynamic alive, I'm vital dynamic alive, I'm vital dynamic alive, and it's good, it's good. Then, I say the magic words. What?
I am peace.
I like me.
Okay, I like me.
I say the magic words, I like me, and I'm dancing on the pathway. Mm-hmm. You see, all is peace and all this stuff. I have no problems. I have no unpeaceful experiences. It's just that I am not yet tuned into my body in the morning yet, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, I like me. You like me, you know. All is in divine order. You know, there I'm trying to get myself in harmony with myself. But I like me. The minute, and it comes by itself.
Yes.
It comes by itself. It says, hey, I like me. I like me. I like me. Woohoo. Yes, 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 you know. And then I say, I like me. I like me. I like me. And Rex is on top of the hill. And he turns and looks at me and he says, you got it. You got it. But you see, this is how it really works. This is how we are working at it. And we're doing great things with it. How are we doing here? Oh, we're doing just great here, too. 57 minutes. Now, isn't that wonderful? We are doing just great. Okay, well, we'll take a pause now and then get ready for our discussion.